pretty certain I had a seizure. I went from 25 miles an hour in a rainstorm to jumping an approach at about 80.
Oh. Hmm.
Floored the pickup. I held the steering wheel so hard it actually tore it off. And my arm went through the navigation screen. I mean, I was just...
Wow.
There is a podcast in Iowa. Funk for Profit was named by they. They stirred up a banker near. Then quick came an auctioneer. Making profit was their first goal. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. Soon may the farmers come to bring us guests and beer and fun. One day when the recording's done, we'll take our mics and go. These formats shook us to our core. With Funk for Fun, you will not snore. Banker set all mics to on, and the mullet of podcasts was born. Soon may the farmers come to bring us guests and beer and fun. One day when the recording's done, we'll take our mics and go. Before we knew, conversations grew. Growing corn even said F you. So won't you join Tenor Dave, Corey and crew? Please like, share, review. Soon may the farmers come to bring us guests and beer and fun. One day when the recording's done, we'll take our mics and go.
Listeners, welcome back to another Farm for Profit episode. This is Tanner Winterhoff.
This is Corey Hillebeau.
And this is David Whitaker.
And David made me stop to tell you how important it is that you leave your reviews behind. He says, Tanner, you have to ask for more reviews. And I'm not talking like, you guys are great at sending us direct messages and emails and all that is awesome. But what really helps us out, if you go out to Apple Podcasts and leave your review out there, we only want 5 stars, right, Corey?
If it's not 5, don't do it.
No, but truly, you guys are awesome. Thanks for hanging out with us. I know it's the middle of the summer. You got plenty of things to do. But that is, if you want to help us out, that's just the one extra thing that you can do for us is go out there, leave a review behind, kind of like our Gearinghoff Head of the Class listener review that's brought to you here today by Gearinghoff. They're the head of the class no matter the crop. Premium harvesting heads for all your harvesting needs. Our listener reviews is exactly what we need, and Gearinghoff is exactly what you need, Corey.
Yeah, today's review is by Thomas French. Thank you for the review, Thomas. It says, I recommend the Farm for Profit podcast. They do 2 styles. One is like an educational one, and then they do one for the fun.
Just for the fun of it.
So that's Farm for Profit, and then Farm for Fun, our happy hour spinoff.
And it says that can be really entertaining. I had to kind of make my own.
Kind of like what we do here.
Not a direct quote. Not a direct quote, but you get it.
And real quick, before we jump into our From the Field segment, thank you again to Kimberly Ag for hanging out with us a couple weeks ago and putting together a quick little sponsorship program in preparation for their fall field day, September 15th and 16th.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be afraid to check out KimberlyAgConsulting.com to learn more about their family-run business.
Yeah. And now, guys, on the phone, we got Brody Benton with BW Fusion, and let's see what's happening in the field.
So it is hot. It is... Polliny, if you want, if that's a word. Just spent the afternoon in a couple fields taking tissue samples and weighing biomass and stuff like that in some trials, and it looks like someone took a whole bag of pollen just threw it in my face. So
it's an orgy.
I was going to say, Corey's been referring to this as corn sex.
I saw TikTok like that the other day.
It is kind of wide open, isn't it?
So what are you seeing in your territory? How do crops look?
It just came from southwest Iowa here this afternoon. Kind of been all over here in this last week. And it's amazing what rain does. Still a big concern out in the countryside with, you know, there's areas. You go up to northern Iowa, they got 1.5 inches of rain last week. You go down to where we live in central Iowa, we got 3 to 4 inches. Southwest Iowa is kind of in that same boat. But there's still a fear that, okay, if we turn this temperature up to 95 for a week, that we could be putting a lot of stress on this crop. And that's true. We could be doing that. You know, from a pollination standpoint, temperature-wise, you couldn't ask for anything better here this week. We've hit a great window. But at the same time, we need to ask ourselves, you know, that early season stress, especially in central Iowa, western Iowa, well, basically I-35 West, and then you got pockets up in northeast Iowa as well. You know, what did that early season stress do as far as building that plant factory and setting that plant up to you know, have silks coming out at the same time that we have pollen coming out. And I guess I would encourage growers to go out and check that out and see, you know, we get full pollination from that standpoint, just because there's going to be a wider array of stresses that have come from that stress event that that we had during that vegetative time frame and growing that plant factor.
So for our listeners, they asked when we did these From the Field segments to tell what date we're recording this. So we're recording this on July 21st. So we're about ready to run into a heat stretch here in Central Iowa, and that's what Brody's talking about, Corey.
Yeah, and we'll be coming. The show will be coming out in that heat stretch, it looks like. So next Monday, which would be like, I don't know, the 26th, something. I don't know. I have the calendar right in front of me. But so what could we be looking for? What kind of things could we do, Brody, to kind of help with this stress event?
Yeah, so from an agronomic management standpoint, our options start to dwindle as we go through the season. But the biggest thing that we can do right now is be able to, you know, what can we do to manage that stress? What can we do to minimize that crop from burning through energy just because it's overheated at night, overheated during the day, short on water, be able to lower that respiration and ethylene production within that plant. And that's where, you know, products like Respite come into play, the ethylene inhibitors. C-amino is another mode of action, if you want to call it, as far as minimizing stress, providing short-term energy and vitamins to that plant, are things that all can be done, you know, going with the fungicide, going with, you know, or on its own, just to be able to manage plant efficiencies. One thing that I have not seen much of is any sort of, you know, fungal diseases that's out in the field. You know, that's not saying that it's not going to come, because it may come at some point. But, you know, one thing that I look at a lot of, and you know, maybe people have other experiences, but, you know, I know when we get a lot of storms coming out of the south throughout the summer, you know, that's a big recipe for bringing those fungal diseases from the south up to the north. And most of our weather patterns have pretty much been out of the west or northwest here throughout the summer. So, you know, that doesn't surprise me that we're not seeing a whole lot of disease pressure right now. But like I said, we'll probably see that happen here at some point. So that's on the corn side. You know, on the bean side, we got a lot of great opportunities yet. We're just hitting that R3 window on those mid to late two beans, early three beans. Here through Iowa, and that's where Advance is a big play, given that plant energy, stimulating, flowering. And the thing is with that product, you're going to produce so much of a hunger for additional boron to retain and turn those flowers into pods, or into the pods, that I pair a lot of Advance and VW Advance and Boron 7 together to be able to simulate new flowering and get those pod clusters of 4 to 5 pods in that upper third part of that canopy as we go through the final reproductive stages on soybeans.
Brody, I'm glad we've got a guy like you, because some of that stuff was clear over my head.
Same here.
I'm listening to it. I kind of understand it because I've been doing it. Brody's got me mixing. I'm like Breaking Bad, like on the spray trailer. I mean, I got like 6-7 products going into a tank, and when you got a 3-inch pump, there's not a lot of time for that. So you're just sweating your butt off.
Your own cardio.
Yeah.
Functional fitness.
Just sweat all day filling the spray tank. So hopefully the crops look good for us, and that we have BW Fusion products on, and I got some pretty high expectations this fall.
That's good. So the last thing, Brody, that we had talked about earlier that I want to cover today is, as guys are starting to look towards the fall and getting everything ready to roll, you had mentioned when we first had our conversation about a product called Meltdown. And that's something that we want to do in the fall, correct? Could you remind us what that is?
Yeah, so Meltdown is 27 microbes, which 4 of those are fungal communities. And why that's important is you know, there's many. We just had this conversation with some of my cohorts today, and I said Meltdown is your linchpin to having the entire system work more efficiently within that soil profile, whether that's going into next year with the residue management from applications this fall or even next spring. I understand that there's logistic challenges in the fall with every operation through harvest, and who knows what Mother Nature will throw at us. at this point. But the fungal communities are very critical for breaking down carbon and making that available in the soil system to fuel that entire soil profile from a food standpoint, getting more out of the biology. Also, as far as converting that organic in that's in the soil throughout the next growing season. The key point right now for fall applications is if you're no-tilling soybeans, and I heard this over and over and over again this spring, is we got to do more about residue management. Well, this is the next opportunity this fall. If you're no-tilling soybeans in particular or corn on corn, Bell Down is that key player to start that degradation process, or be able to effectively have better seed-to-soil contact with your planter come next spring on those no-till soybean acres in particular. So, and then there's a whole additional host of things that the meltdown brings to the table that would probably still be very deep conversation for from the field segment. But, those are the first two, key points as we go into fall and them to a greater effect for next year.
Nice. Well, that's a good point. It's hard to get really deep in these quick segments, so remind our listeners how to get a hold of you and where they can learn more about BW Fusion.
So you can learn about BW Fusion at bwfusion.com, or you can give me a call at 515-650-0501 to learn more about Meltdown, Advance, even going into the 365 program for this fall. How can you more effectively manage your input costs going into next fall? And that's how you learn what the soil is able to provide your crop and what it's not able to provide. And how can I stretch my investment dollars even further? Because the thing that we're all facing as we go into 2022 is that the ante to get into the card game for next year is twice as much as what it was for 2020.
Right.
So we need to be more effective and more efficient in our input costs for next year, because we don't know quite what commodity prices will look like in the fall of 2022.
Yep, I think you nailed it right on the head, Brody.
That made me laugh thinking that analogy, the ante. Are you the big blind or the small blind? Or you just fold this hand?
Yeah. Are you gonna go all in? Yeah. Yep. Exactly. Cool. Thanks for your time, Brody. We really appreciate you stepping in. Also, thanks to BW Fusion for supporting the podcast. I think it's time for us to roll into our guest for today.
Shut up and sit down.
Do what he said.
Today, we have an ultra special guest on the Farm for Profit, Farm for Fun Summer Series. You know why he's so special, Tanner?
Why, Corey?
Because he actually paid to be in here with us today. Which, who in their right mind would do that? I will tell you who. It's a man with a huge heart because he paid $900 to the Travis Burkhart Foundation auction that we held in March. The joke's on him, though, because we would have had him on for free. He is the head BTO on Farm Talk. Do you know how I know that, Dave?
How do you know that?
Because he was coming down for his day in studio. Picture this. He broke down on the road, him and his wife. And you know what the normal person would do? Find an Uber. Rent a car.
Uh-huh.
Nope, not for them. They went to the dealership and bought one because they will not be denied their day in the studio with the Farm for Profit podcast. From South Dakota, Mr. Taylor Sumption. What is up, Taylor?
Hey, guys.
Head BTO.
I'd say thanks for the invite. I'm not sure if I really was invited or not.
Well, yeah.
I've been looking forward to this. It was great. The trip down went less than ideal, but we made it.
Okay, start there before introducing yourself. What has happened to you in the last 24 hours?
Okay, we were down. My family just started an oatmeal company, and we were bringing some packaging material on the way to Michigan and picking up oatmeal to bring back to our warehouse. And our cube van, a sensor in the DEF system failed, and they're on a national back order, and they have no idea when this little sensor is going to show up. So our truck is sitting there, and we couldn't find a rental car. We couldn't find a rental truck. We couldn't find anything, so we ended up at a Ford dealership, and we'd been kind of looking for a new car, so this kind of spurred us into action.
So they are in a Ford Explorer
Expedition.
It's already dusty. He's been down Iowa gravel with it. They wanted to detail it for him. He said, nope, I got to get to the podcast.
I have a date with a podcast.
We left the garage door open at Tanner's house. They rolled in, showered, slept in your truck last night, right?
Yes. My wife and I slept in a cube van last night. That was extremely uncomfortable. I did manage to sleep a little bit. Being a farmer, I'm pretty good at sleeping about anywhere, but I don't think she slept at all. So
maybe she's out on the couch right now snoozing.
So, guys, if you aren't hooked by now, I don't know what it would take to hook you.
Yeah, I mean.
What a story to begin with.
Uh-huh.
So let's get in the background.
Yeah, now go into you. What about you? What about Taylor? What about Sumption Farms?
Yeah, I was born in the 70s, 1975. I grew up on a family farm. My great-great-grandfather homesteaded near where I live back in 1882. He actually originally homesteaded in Worth County, Iowa, and got married in Otranto in Mitchell County. And in 1882, decided South Dakota looked like a better opportunity, so they moved up that way. My family's been farming that area ever since. I've got four brothers, the five of us all farm in partnership in Frederick, South Dakota.
Wow, how do you make that work?
It's like being married. If you said you never fought, you'd be lying. We do, and it's about making it work. And our situation's a little unique. The five of us each kind of have a little niche or specialty in what we like to do, and it all just kind of really meshed together. With wives and children, it gets more and more complicated, mm-hmm. and that's the big focus now is what does the future look like? How do we integrate those children? And because when you bring in that many, then it gets more complex and there's lots of moving parts. And, you know, some people want a simple life. Some people want just to work every day. And you have to work through all of those different kind of wants and needs. And communication's the key part, you know, and a lot of meetings and talking and focusing on what you want, what you're happy with. And that's the big challenge, like with any good partnership.
I tell you, right now I'm struggling with writing a outline for a Farm for Profit show because we've had a lot of listeners write in asking for advice on how to separate farm and business and family. You know, you would like to think that farm and business go together, but there is a line between farm and business, and then you involve family. There's three. So that's what I've been really struggling with. I know Corey and I have talked about it a little bit. Some of our other listeners have had a conversation trying to almost find like a behavioral expert to dive into maybe ways that you just get along with people.
And I'd say there's more emotion in agriculture than any other business I've been in. And even when it comes, you guys know I sell farms. We sold one for 30 different heirs. You talk about kids, you get so many kids in there. You better be communicating by the time you get to 30. Otherwise, you're screwed.
Well, you know, it's so personal. And as farmers, we don't communicate the best sometimes, especially within our family. And one thing that we did, and we didn't do it willingly, my aunt made us do it, was we took a personality test. Like, I can't remember. You had to actually pay for one. It's not one of the
Briggs
ones.
Yeah. Briggs personality test.
And then you sit there and you're like, okay, so that's why he always does that. Or that's why she makes those decisions. Like, you actually start to learn how they, because they're, you know, even though you're a brother and sister, doesn't mean you think alike. It's like completely opposite. So, like, it helps out. Okay, maybe you're better in the office and maybe I'm better out doing something.
I did that too a few years back, and I'm kind of what you'd call the CEO, CFO in our operation. I think more just because I enjoy that type of work and my brothers don't want anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. It really helped me become a better leader in that respect because I realized like I have some brothers that need that positive influence, like, hey, you did a great job. And I would never say that. And farmers, you typically don't, you know, my brothers and I were workaholics. I mean, we just worked really long, mm-hmm. hard hours, and it's pretty easy to get real emotional. And I think that's a big part in agriculture is you put so much sweat equity into what you're doing that you do get emotional over it.
I hadn't turned the TV on for a long time, and wife has the girls at VBS this week. So I got some nights free. I'm using air quotes, and I turned on Deadliest Catch. And there's one of those boats has two brothers that own it. One's obviously captain of the boat. The other one's the lead deckhand. And he broke a crane and just was cursing out over the microphone on that employee that he thought had broke it. And when it was his brother that came up, he started immediately apologizing. Like, oh, I know you know what you're doing. This must have been a fluke accident. I overreacted. I mean, it's tough everywhere when you're working with family.
Yeah, and it's a challenge. And, you know, my family has a long tradition of not getting along. My grandfather and his siblings imploded quite painfully. So we've got a pretty stepped history in seeing that. And I'm hoping we're the first part of that, you know, genealogy that maybe makes it through.
Right.
It's not easy. And it gets more and more complicated as you get more diverse. And, you know, we hired an individual from Iowa here. He's actually Canadian. And he helped us work through some of those details. And then the natural progression of farms, when you think about it, like the matriarch and patriarch of a farm, they love their family. They want it to be all family. They want to, if one kid gets in trouble, they want to take care of it. When you go to two or three generations from that, you know, maybe he got into trouble and needs to get himself out. Do you mm-hmm. transition into more of a business? Mm-hmm. You know, and that's the sticking point, I think, when you get to that. It's called the third generation curse for a reason, because then you get into those issues.
Well, and I was having a conversation about this the other day, and Corey, maybe you farming as well. The sub-1,000-acre farmer is what I'm going to say. Is there a spot for the sub-1,000-acre farmer? And so when you get generations that go together, Tanner, where there's multiple, that's to remain relevant in the industry, you need to be more than 1,000 acres anymore, was the conversation I was having with another guy. And to do that, you see family members tie together so that it's, you know, from 1 to 20, 50,000 acres, whatever they're farming. But to do that, normally you combine your resources together.
Right. And that was, you know, when my brothers and I began farming, it was out of necessity that we worked together. Yep. You know, rather than have five old junky combines that won't stay together, we were able to buy one nice one. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get those benefits of pooling your labor and equipment, but, you know, the trade-off is you've got to get along and work together.
Yeah. Right. Whose field do we go to first?
Yeah, where?
Right.
Get everything kind of figured out in a pecking order.
Don't you have that with your neighbors? You guys all share a lawnmower?
We do. We do, yep.
Oh, that's right. We're the bearing debacle.
I didn't even think about that. We're the BTOs.
How many hours was it? 15.1,
and I had what I think is three bearings go out, two on the deck and one on the front spindle, and they only replaced the front spindle under warranty and said, just run the deck until something more serious shows up.
City boy problems.
BTO.
You come pick this machine up right now. We bought it. We bought it.
But I tell you what, on a small scale, I made the call that it needed to go back in, and everybody was like, wow, but I need to mow my yard. I need to mow my yard. I'm like, the front wheel fell off. You can't mow your yard. Like, I understand. I had to figure out a way to communicate to them that, no, I understand your grass is tall.
Pick this son of a bitch up and give me a new one.
Corey, we need shirts that says Ballard BTO. Right, yeah, there. That's what we need, shirts.
Ballard Yard BTO. Yeah.
Okay, we have a lot of beer this week. So thank you to Dahl Distributing. Before we move on with Taylor, we are going to taste a lot of different flavors of the same beer, is what it's looking like to me. So Dahl brought in Boulevard Brewing Company, Unfiltered Wheat, but the first one we're going to try is Kiwi.
Yeah, we've had Boulevard on before. I like their beer. They have a lot of different options, but I don't think I've ever had Kiwi in a beer before.
I don't know if I like the way it smells.
Hazy American Classic.
It definitely has a unique smell.
Oh, that is not what I expected.
Hmm.
That's very sweet.
It's like Sour sweet. Patch Kids.
It's
yeah.
almost more of like a seltzer-y tasting beer.
I like it. See?
Oh, yeah, of course you do.
This could be Dave's week.
Yeah, that's good.
Taylor, what do you think?
It's good. I like Kiwi. I love wheat beer, so it's definitely sweeter than my liking, but I think one on a hot day or something would be all right.
I did not expect it to be that sweet. I thought this was going to be almost, you think of those sparkling waters that have a flavor to them, and it's just a hint of a flavor. I didn't expect the kiwi to be so overpowering.
Yep. 4.4% alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Very sleek black can.
Yep. Black, and then all the writing is white, except for the unfiltered kiwi is green.
Yep. All their cans have good branding to them because it's green, it's blue, it's white, it's red, orange, etc.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you, Dahl.
Nice. So, Taylor, either I didn't hear it or not. Do we get to what types of crops you guys farm? We got into the family part, but...
Yeah, we kind of jumped right in. And that honestly is a big part of our story. How do you make that work? It's the biggest question I get. But we primarily corn and soybeans. We've introduced oats here a few years back and are getting more into that as a third crop rotation. A little bit of alfalfa, some grass hay. We do run a commercial cow-calf herd and a registered Angus herd as well. I've got some nephews that raise a few club calves and have gotten into that a little bit. So they're more of a hobby than a business, mm-hmm. but it's something to to occupy their time, and it's gone fairly well. COVID kind of knocked the calf show thing in the head a little bit, but it's coming back some.
Yeah, it's getting back there.
Yeah, David pointed out to me during COVID there was a couple of companies that were doing virtual livestock shows to where the judge, either the judge looked at everything through the computer or it was done something along those lines. Do you remember what that was?
You had to record videos and send them videos so they want to see the confirmation, watch them walk out, et cetera, et cetera. And then there was a part of it for showmanship that you had to have take a video of your kid or whoever is the showman for it and set them up, et cetera. So do you do a lot of show cattle or just more registered?
You know, not really. My family, I don't do any myself or my children. I have one son that's in 4-H that does some, but he's gotten busy as he's gotten older and just kind of moved away a little bit. But I've got nephews that are, I mean, love it. They're in it. One nephew is in vet school right now. He was really big into it. And of course, he's pretty busy now being in vet school, so he's kind of put that on hiatus a little bit. But he's the one that really got into breeding some show calves and did quite well with them for the short time that he was doing it.
You said he's in vet school?
Yeah, at Purdue.
Elena? Vet school?
Mm-hmm.
Elena's in studio with us. The last time ever, probably.
Oh,
unless she wants to come back.
We're going
to
make it happen again.
And show, it's Story County Fair this week, so all the locals.
And Polk County Fair.
And Polk County. They're all showing cattle. All the 4-H kids are out there, so shout out to 4-H.
And FFA.
Uh-huh.
So the other thing that you kind of led with before we jumped on that family bandwagon was the oats. And that was the reason for the box truck. So tell us a little bit more about your oat story.
Yeah. A few years back, we were looking for a third crop to diversify a little bit, get into some cover crop fall grazing, different things like that. And then we've got a lot of property up our way that, whether it's rock piles, drainage, fences, getting that cleaned up in the fall where we live is tough because we harvest clear into winter. So that third crop gives us a chance in August to go out and clean up ground, improve it. So we brought oats back. And, you know, the big struggle with small grains is, I mean, there's a reason no one grows them. They're not profitable. You know, so you look for ways to make that work. And the straw we needed for our cow herd, so that added a little value. I had the idea of adding a value-added crop or doing some type of processing quite a while ago, 7 or 8 years ago, and was really struggling on, you know, what to do, what kind of grain, oats is one that kind of crossed my mind, so we got to looking in, well, you know, if we can add a little bit of value to our oat crop, that might be a good option. So we started to research a little bit. Initially, I was looking into getting into, like, oat milk, oat yogurt, frozen, like oat ice cream, those types of products. They're really, really gaining popularity.
Do you think, just sorry to interrupt you, do you think oat ice cream would taste better than soy sauce on ice cream?
I think it would. I don't care.
Oat ice cream with soy sauce.
You can make ice cream out of oats?
Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm really torn on this one because I love dairy. I support dairy. I love ice cream, love cheese. Not a real big milk drinker, but it's a growing market. You know, not to disparage what those folks do. I love them. We need them in agriculture. So looking into those products, it's almost impossible for some, you know, farmer like me to get into that market. It's the refrigerator, freezer section in stores are coveted. They're expensive. They're not going to give me a spot there.
Right.
So then our consultant we looked into, you know, oatmeal products and what we could do there. And that's what we landed on and come up with a brand and built it around it. And we're just doing our first production run. It was supposed to be last winter. It's just been one, you know, kind of hiccup after another, whether it's packaging materials and, you know, processing, and COVID has slowed up a lot of plants. And so it's been some challenges there, and we're finally kind of working through some of that and getting to where, you know, we should be in stores. Our first big sell was Hy-Vee. They're just getting started. I'm not sure how long it takes to get through their system, but we should be in Hy-Vee's within, I would say, 30 to 60 days, hopefully.
Cool.
And what's it going to be called?
Anthem.
Anthem.
Anthem Oats. Yep. Anthemoats.com is our website for anybody that would want to go check it out.
And Tanner, we talked about this on like episode 25. I mean, it was a year and a half ago about how farmers can diversify to make extra money on their farm. Sounds like that's exactly what you did, is found a solution to another problem, another way to possibly diversify and make money.
Yeah, the big motivation was being a commodity farmer was really burning me out. and burning a candle at both ends. I mean, just, I was strung out 3 years ago and was in a pretty serious accident. And primarily because of that, you know, 18, 20 hour days, not eating right, not sleeping right, trying to figure out how do you make money, you know, raising $2.50 corn? How do I bring back three more children into our operation when we're already in the red on our income statement? You know, how do you make these things work? And the answer where we live is you either keep growing in acres or add value to what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And it seems like when we get more efficient and find a way to make money raising corn and soybeans, we get squeezed down a little bit more, mm-hmm. you know, and I just got sick of that game, really, and just thought there's got to be something better. There's got to be a better way than what we're doing.
Yeah. I talked to a farmer this morning that also is a retailer and, you know, talks about how he wants to make margin and knows that he just has to pass along the inflated cost in this upcoming growing season to the producer because he needs to keep his margin in there. And it's, he's brokering, still has to make money for what he's doing to pay his own bills or add to his own bottom line, but just was commenting on how farmers get squeezed. We finally get prices inflated a little bit on the sales side for a crop, and then all that happens is inputs come right up with it.
Right. You get that one score. Like this year, I mean, we're sitting on a pretty remarkable crop failure because of the drought where we're at, but it's really the one chance was kind of this year because all our inputs were bought reasonable, you know, your fertilizer, everything was fairly cheap and the prices shoot up. So you get that one big score, yeah. But next year the price might even be higher yet, but you'll make less money because you're going to get kind of pecked at from all sides.
And way more risk because you buy your inputs and right. then if the prices fall back down, well, all your inputs are in right. one basket and bought high. So yeah, you're screwed there. So
you guys are pretty dry out there.
Yeah, it seems like we were spoon-feeding rains as we needed them, real spotty. And, you know, you can drive 5 miles, and, I mean, we've got corn. We have a little bit of irrigated ground. Looks phenomenal because we need heat, and we've had plenty of that. But dry land-wise, we've got beans that are beautiful, look good. We've got corn that's pollinated, looks really good, and you can drive 10 miles, and it's waist-high, tasseled out. Looks like it's ready to die.
Oof. Yikes. I know we're bouncing around, but I want to go back to the oats. So for someone who doesn't have a clue what that process is like getting into a Hy-Vee, so you harvest it, you put them in a bin. What goes on after you put it back in the semi, pulling it out of the bin? Where's it
sure.
go?
What's you know, initially I looked at doing all phases in-house, and, you know, the equipment and processing costs are just extraordinary in those types of facilities. And if it didn't work out, that's all money out the window, essentially. I mean, that's equipment that would sell for pennies on the dollar. So we didn't want to take that risk. So we partnered up with a couple companies that are fairly close. And from our place, we put in cleaners, and we make sure it's a clean, safe product. It's never contaminated in any trucks hauling anything that shouldn't be right. in our oats. And then the next step is it goes up and gets dehulled into groats. And then within
groats,
yeah. Once you take that hull off the oats, it's called a groat.
Okay.
And after it's dehulled, we haul the groats to a company in Fargo that mills it into the different oatmeal products. And from there, it's put into super sacks, and then we haul them to a facility that packages it for us.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So you touch it 6 times.
It gets moved around. You know, and honestly, you know, in a couple of our products, the packaging and ingredients are more than the oats that's in it.
Oh, really?
So, going to be in Hy-Vee, how many products are you guys going to have?
We have 13 SKUs. We have 4 flavors in the cartons, like instant packets that you tear open.
Okay.
There's maple pecan, peach cranberry, pumpkin spice, and vanilla chai.
So that would be like an instant oatmeal?
Yep.
Okay.
And then we have a cup. That's like a to-go cup. You take it with work, whatever. You add water, microwave yep. it. In that, we have the vanilla chai and peach cranberry, again, that are shared between the two. And then we have super fruit.
What's the super fruit?
Super fruit is the blueberry strawberry. I think that one's going to be
like, he was looking for
aronia berry.
Aronia berries.
The one thing about that we've looked at is aronia berries.
Yeah.
And I was at a value-added egg event about a year ago, and they made some pie with them. Yep. And I've always heard about them.
Yep.
And they're related to the choke cherry, which is yep. huge up where we live. Yep. And I think they would be great in it. And I actually was kind of researching and looking for people that grew them. Yeah. And that, I mean, we're looking right now as we launch. Yeah. The fourth flavor in the cups is the dark chocolate brownie.
Oh.
One thing we did in our flavors is we tried to get a few that are a little cutting edge or more modern twist. It seems like a lot of your oatmeal flavors are just pretty stale. They've been out there. Everyone has kind of the same ones. So we tried to add some that were a little unique or cutting edge. As we get launched here, our next focus is what's next, because we, you know, come up with something new.
You better get them before the people plow them all under. So that's happening.
Yeah. Not just anybody can make their own oatmeal. You got to be somewhat volume to have enough to do that. How many acres do you need? Or maybe that's the wrong question. I don't even want to know that. How much volume do you have to be able to start your own line?
It really depends on, you know, how much you sell, which is the million-dollar question for us. We have no idea. You know, you try to put a number on that. We don't know. One thing we did a production run. We thought that would hold us till that November, December time frame, and we went online on Thursday to start distribution, and we're almost out of product.
Ooh. Oh, mercy.
So right now we're getting another production phase lined up. A big issue that we're going to see right now in the whole industry in oats is there's no oats out there. And where they do grow oats, canola took a big chunk out with the price being high. And then Canada's been so hot and dry that their oat crops.
I'm going to have to get him connected to Nick Hansen.
I got oats on my CRP. I better go combine those. I was just going to mow them down.
It doesn't take a lot of oats. I mean, when you look at the acres, like our farm, we would have to do about 7 or 8 times what we're projecting before we would ever not be able to grow it. Hmm. But those are conversations we're having right now on how do we, because we kind of built our brand around it's from our farm.
You guys, you know. Yep. Yeah, where do you dilute that? Is it
right,
mean that one in four oats comes from our farm?
So or all of them? That's how wineries do it. They all say, oh, this is local. They have like 2 bottles of wine from their local winery.
And the big thing to me is I don't want to mislead consumers. I want to be open, transparent, upfront.
Yeah.
Right now we're having conversations with family farms that, hey, if this thing explodes beyond our wildest dreams and we need to procure product, we want to identify people that use the same protocols we do. We're going to probably inspect fields and equipment, you know, making sure that it lives up to what we've tried to build. And we're hoping that we can start a cooperative that buys for this company, and it just expands into multiple farms.
Wow, that's amazing. That's good. So what makes like oats, quick oats, or what? Because I know I...
Sure. That's one that... It's amazing. Like even farmers don't know about the oat milling process and how it works. Like you have your steel cut, your instant, and then your old fashioned. Once you dehull it to a groat, your old fashioned is simply a steam flaked groat. It's big, you know, it's going to be larger in size.
Right.
Steel cut, they'll run that groat through a cutting mill or like, you know, roller with grooves and cut it. And then your instant oatmeal is simply that steel-cut oats that's flaked. So it's smaller pieces that get flaked. It just cooks quicker. They're a little thinner.
So there's nothing added, nothing nutritionally different. It's just how they cook.
Nope. Okay. Yeah, and that's an interesting thing when you go through the store. You know, the steel-cut will be one of the most expensive products, if not the most expensive oatmeal product on shelf, and it's the cheapest one to make.
It's the first step removed. So, marketing. Steel cut oats. Yeah. They are the upper echelon of oats.
And you didn't go into the oat milk, or can you even call it milk? Would that be like direct competitor with almond milk?
Yeah, it would. You know, and the thing about oat milk, I think, in my opinion, might start to take over some of, you know, when you look at almond milk, and not to beat up almond farmers, but almonds are not a very environmentally friendly crop to grow. They take a lot of water. And to make milk out of almonds, you put a lot of preservatives and things in it that people that are health conscious and buy almond milk, I think they're too...
And can we even call it milk? It's nut juice, right?
Yeah. And that's one thing with oats. You know, you basically take the oat flour and filter water through it to make oat milk. And it's a little more stable product on shelf than a lot of your other milk alternatives.
You should do a TikTok milking oats. in the parlor.
Yeah. There was that promo video that just the guy,
go ahead.
The guy in Canada made for his. They were just egg advocates making jokes about that.
That's funny. Yeah, Just your local BTO out here milking my oats.
Milking my
oats. Milk these oats three times a day.
Can't milk your oats unless you're a BTO. All right, let's jump into another beer. Yes. Still on the Boulevard Unfiltered Wheat train from Dahl Distributing. This one that I poured out is the grapefruit one.
It smells like grapefruit.
Hmm.
I don't mind that.
I like that better.
It's very grapefruity.
I like that better than the kiwi.
Yeah.
But I would probably say, in general, I like grapefruit better than kiwi.
Yeah.
I ate too many kiwis one time.
You what?
Yeah. You know those little black seeds?
I do.
Yeah, you feel every one of those coming out.
How?
That's terrible.
So the real question is...
Hold on.
It's like sandpaper.
Do they come out with your zipper, or do they come out when you open your... No, I'm just kidding.
So wait a minute. One, I didn't know you could eat too many kiwis.
I didn't either. I really loved kiwis when I was younger.
Kiwis?
And I probably ate like... So 10 of them. They don't break down.
Wow.
It hurt. That was a Snapchat. It was pre-Snapchat.
That would have been great for Sammy.
This is
60 grit sandpaper, then, is what you're saying. Yeah. It's not like a 400 grit.
Is that? I wonder if that's what it feels like when people are doing this deworming that you sent me.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen that on TikTok? People are taking parasite dewormers, like for humans.
Yeah. So,
and people are like,
the studio voice says that you can take Safeguard for humans. Well, I don't think it was Safeguard. This is ivermectin.
People were taking ivermectin for COVID.
Yeah.
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 And they're saying dewormers are like a cancer cure or something now, too.
Gee, many Christmas.
So I've got some on order.
Oh, this is
we should all do it.
No, this is going to make they a great show like, to listen to.
There's
your
like parasites coming out of your skin.
No, this
you
is.
You pee it out.
I guess this will be one of those seeing is believing, and I don't know if I want to see.
They say like day 3 through 7 is the worst.
Well, don't start it before a podcast. I don't want day 3 between day 3 and 7 to be
days.
Over recording.
You got to do it for 10 days.
So you're going to have to do it right after we record so we don't mess none of this stuff up.
Oh, boy.
Look at the time. Well, I tell you.
Anyway, thank you to Dole. Yeah, we really went off the rails on the Boulevard Wheat Grapefruit. So black can. What is this color? Pink?
No, it's red.
It's grapefruity.
Is it colorblind?
So, Taylor, how did you get onto the auction on TikTok to help out with the Burkhart Foundation?
I found TikTok. Everyone, you know, the kids were all talking about it, and I'd kind of gotten onto that, and for whatever reason, caught my attention as something kind of neat, despite my age. And it started out as my son and I were kind of competing who could get more views than the other, and it seemed like the harder you tried, the worse you did.
Yes.
And then one day I'm in the combine, and we've had like 3 years in a row where we've had October snowstorms, which is crazy early, but so we're out trying to harvest soybeans in the snow. So one day I'm going along the fence line, and I took this really crappy 20-second clip with snow going in our flex draper, and it went somewhat crazy, and I shot way up, way past my son and followers, which neither one of us is very big in followers, but that kind of, you know, it hooked me a little bit, and I got to looking through, and one of the first posts I came across was Travis Burkhart's story, and it hit close to me because I had a traumatic brain injury, and despite what my prognosis was, I recovered rather remarkably, almost miraculously. I was air flighted with a pretty dismal outlook on possibly being an organ donor.
Hmm.
And woke up and, you know, somewhat inexplicably, I think where I went in, they weren't sure of my injuries and they didn't really have any neurologists or you know, so it was a little bit of unknown, but it really changed my perspective on life. And I started to really connect with people that have gone through that. It's not something I really ever thought of. Even though there's a lot of people out there, especially service people, that have head injuries and, you know, the repercussions of it, the long-term effects. And it just had a profound impact on my life. And I come across that video and I actually messaged Mike. He called and I shared my story with him and we just connected. And I think Mike connects with just about everybody.
Yeah, so he's pretty good at that.
Just a great guy. And that's how my TikTok journey kind of started.
Mike is like the social butterfly of TikTok. Great guy.
I mean,
he's all over the place.
Channel 8 News the other day.
Did you see that production?
Yeah, I did.
And it even got Travis in there.
Yeah.
He had his hair all silver. Cigarette. Like, did he go buy a pack of cigarettes to put in Travis's mouth to be Tony. Oh, that was good. That was quite the production.
That's funny.
Stirring the pot.
I had seen your story on TikTok, but for our listeners, what happened in the accident?
You know, I wish I knew. I really don't. I have some ideas. I wasn't sleeping. I hadn't slept in 3 nights. So I was, spraying, just, strung out. After the accident, the first CT scan, the doctors at our local hospital thought I had a brain tumor, and that caused a seizure. Pretty certain I had a seizure. I went from 25 miles an hour in a rainstorm to jumping an approach at about 80.
Oh.
Floored a pickup. I held the steering wheel so hard it actually tore it off. And my arm went through the navigation screen. I mean, I was just...
Wow.
To me, it didn't make sense that you fell asleep or, So that really didn't add up. And when I went to the scene, a friend of mine actually videotaped a lot of the scenes, and I started trying to piece it together. But there's really no way to know. I had a spot in my right lobe that they thought was a meningioma tumor, but the neurologist, when I got to the second hospital, said it was a blood clot. And it was prior to the accident.
Okay.
And 3 days prior to that accident, I was climbing a grain bin and slipped, and I hit my head on a bolt on the cage that goes around the ladder pretty hard. I don't remember being knocked out, but it definitely knocked me a little goofy.
Sure.
And honestly, I think that might have been the culprit. But the problem was I was so beat up, broke up, and almost dead that there's no way to really know what caused it or what happened, because all the markers were there for a seizure, but so were a lot of other things. Mm-hmm. Lactic acid's a big one if you have a ton of muscle and tissue damage. And my lactic acid was about 5 times what they consider lethal.
Whoa.
Wow.
So there's just a lot of unknowns. And it bugs me to this day that I don't know what happened. And honestly, the only person that wasn't surprised was my wife, because she's like, I knew this day was coming. I didn't know how or why or what, but you were just strung out.
Hmm.
And it was just work. I've always said, I've had one addiction in my life, and it's farming.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know how to let up. I hit it full throttle because I wanted to make my mark. But then 20 years later, and I'm pretty established, and I'm still doing this stupid 20-hour workday stuff, and couldn't explain it other than I just didn't know how to quit.
I was just going to ask, so I know a lot of our listeners probably think exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
Have you been able to change anything or do
you know,
things
it's amazing when something like that happens, how I can sleep now. And I just...
It's okay to sleep.
And the big eye-opener for me was when you're trying to learn how to walk again and then using a walker. My family harvested the oats. They did the work.
Got it done.
I didn't think they could do it without me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to think that brothers are more capable than I am, but it's just, you get in that trap, like, I have to be here.
This is my job.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm the guy that sprays.
Yep.
Yep. So what was the recovery like? What was the time frame?
I did get in the accident was in July. It was 3 years and 3 days ago. I did get in the soybean combine for a few hours. And then by corn harvest, I ran with them the last few days. It wasn't easy, but it was about 6 months, really, to get kind of back. The first few weeks were, my first neurology appointment was, you're never going to farm again. You better get ready to figure out, what you're going to do. And that really put me back because, that was my life. And what do I do now? How am I, and physically I'm not. And that's part of this oatmeal company was, I can't physically do the work. I broke 7 ribs on my left side. And when you break ribs 1 through 4, anybody with a medical background, those are considered fatal ribs, like the top four.
Yeah.
And when you break those, and I broke the top 7 on my left side, 1 on the right, fractured 10 vertebrae. It's pretty remarkable I'm not paralyzed.
Right.
I had several spinal processes and facet joints that are sheared off and broke up and looking at the imagery and stuff, it's pretty remarkable that I didn't get paralyzed, at least in some degree.
Wow.
Yikes.
So do you still have any repercussions? Like, do you notice anything to this day?
No.
Nope. Just fully recovered.
Yeah. I I had mental, like, some memory. Initially, one thing I did that's crazy stupid is I booked about double the fertilizer our farm has ever used. Don't even remember doing it. Don't know why. That was like 2 weeks after I got home. So I was definitely not right.
Yeah.
And no one really knew it because my long-term memory was perfect. I mean, the first thing I did when I got home is I went down to where it happened and measured it out and figured out how fast I was going. Because I'm like a little bit of a physics nerd. I love science. Sure. So, and all of that was perfectly fine. But I would, one day I canceled a doctor's appointment and then drove down to it like 20 minutes later.
Really?
So, and that was just in the first few weeks.
Sure.
And it's scary because you don't know how long. Some people are that way forever.
Oh, you don't realize.
And yeah. It just, you know, after a few months, it just like it all went away. You know, physically, I just, my back isn't, you know, you can't break your ribs and spine that bad and not have some. And I'm old too. So, I mean, physically, I'm doing pretty well, all things considered.
So, what about that salesman that took that fertilizer order?
Oh, right.
Doubled my numbers.
Going to have double the yield next year.
didn't even think that, did they pick up acres? What's this guy doing? Yeah.
I just keep thinking, does your heart start racing when you hear Dukes of Hazzard theme song now? Or like the horn?
You know, it's rather remarkable, and I don't know how or why, and I've really struggled with, you know, the reasoning behind it, why I'm here, because there's a lot of people go through a lot less things than I did, and they don't make it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird, you know, you think about survivor's guilt, and I never gave that a minute's thought, and now you watch things happen to people that are like a 30-mile-an-hour crash, and they die, and I'm like,
yeah.
I jumped a pickup 60 yards, and no seatbelt, you know, everything wrong, and why, you know, why?
You held on to that steering wheel.
Yeah. Let's lighten this up a little bit. We had to get that story in there. I had planned on you telling that story.
Honestly, I haven't talked about it much at all. And I don't really know why, other than I've really paid attention to people that have the similar things and try to. And that's what really grabbed me onto Mike's story with Travis is.
Yeah.
It hit home.
Well, we appreciate you bidding on the auction for him and started the Midwest division of the Travis Burkhart Foundation.
Yeah, it's already been put to work, so that's really cool.
Yeah, he's talked to us a couple times. Like, if you have any issues with cancer, medical expenses at all, make sure to go to their website, and you can fill out a form and apply for some assistance.
And it sounds like the funds are available. It's a pretty quick response. So, TBF. Travis Burkhart Foundation, give him a look up. But to lighten the mood just a little bit, the other thing that you do on top of farming is you've got a pilot's license, correct?
Yes. Still have the pilot's license. I don't currently have a medical. With my accident, they don't like brain injuries.
Uh-huh.
It used to be a real case-by-case. They would assess every individual.
Yeah.
And now they kind of pool them into groups.
Oh, really?
And I fit in a group that they're not real favorable with. I went back and forth trying to get my medical. I feel like I'm fully capable and you know, I might be biased in that. I don't know. But sure. I've been through all the studies, and I was told that I needed to go 3 years with no seizures, no mental deficit. And that was 3 days ago.
Oh, yeah.
So I was at the doctor on Tuesday and working through what I need to do to get that medical back. I'm pretty confident that will happen.
There's one good thing to having a pilot's license. So my uncle farms in Montana, and he got pulled over, I guess this is probably 20 years ago now, and he was cruising, and the officer pulls him over and says, "You got a pilot's license to fly this thing?" Matter of fact, yes, I do. It didn't help him. But he pulled it out. So
I suffer from the same affliction. I've had my share of speeding tickets. It's just, I don't know.
Dave too.
Yeah.
I didn't realize Dave's was in his blood. Now that makes sense.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I do.
Let's try another beer.
Let's do it.
What do we got? Another Boulevard. Is this the one you opened?
Yes. The blue one.
It's so all distributing.
Green,
coming to you.
Red, blue.
Yeah. Unfiltered, dry, hopped wheat.
Ooh, hop doesn't sound good.
This isn't going to be fruity.
No. Oh, yeah. That's not bad, Dave. Come on. It's not even an IPA.
I was going to say they almost tried to make a wheat beer into an IPA.
Yeah.
It's also 4.4. Are these all
4.4? I think that's what they tried to do. I'm not a big fan of hops or IPAs, so.
Yeah. That is. It's a very weak. It's almost like a watered down.
Somebody
IPA.
Somebody listening needs to make a hop that tastes like sugar, and then I'm in.
Hop sugary hop.
How about spit my beer out?
There's a new product right there.
I like that. I like that beer.
How about spit that out? A hop that tastes like sugar.
Then you make her hoppy all day long.
See, it just got a new expedition. BTO edition.
Yeah. The BTO edition.
The BTO edition
comes
expedition.
Already with gravel on it.
But I think the true BTO aspect is how you go crop scouting in your Jeep.
Yeah. Used to haul a four-wheeler around, just had a one-ton pickup, and I hated unloading and loading in trailers. And I originally looked at side-by-sides and for what they cost, and we're spread out. Our furthest fields are close to 90 miles from each other. So
I got you.
We cover some ground.
Yeah.
And I bought an older Jeep to put a soil probe in it, and that's what first kind of got me hooked, because when the corn got up about waist high, I would jump in that. It's got a lot of clearance, and you literally set the cruise at 65. You can drive to a field, whip right in, check it, and it's fast. And so I bought a newer one as a kind of a runaround vehicle, and it works good. You get a lot of strange looks when you're out in waist high corn in a Jeep driving around, but it honestly works pretty good.
You see on TikTok the other day, Cody Gayer was on his motorcycle. He's like, how do you guys check crops?
That was cool.
And he's just sort of like mowing down the beans straight away.
Also so. Love his Fu Manchu that he's been rocking.
Yeah.
Since fourth.
That's how my father-in-law checks crops, is he's always been a Harley guy, but then got a Honda CR something, like a dirt bike / motorcycle cross. And that's exactly what, and he'll come flying out there. He'll even bring that thing out in the field, and I don't understand why he comes to the combine or whatever's broke down in the fall with that, because he never comes with any freaking tools. It's like he comes to assess the situation and then goes back to
At least you have some tool space.
Right. You come with beer or tools.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Nope, just come up. Oh, there he is. We'll just tell him exactly what we told him on the phone.
Yep.
I can say that because he doesn't listen.
Yeah. Those side-by-side, the whole side-by thing, we have a Polaris Ranger on the farm, and it's awesome. But then, like, I think about getting another one or whatever or trading. It's like, you can get a Jeep, or you can get a, what are the little things, Geo Tracker or whatever. Like, they're like $3,000. They're four-wheel drive. You can put mud tires on them. They got cruise control. You can take them into town. Like,
yep.
I don't get it. Why would you not just get one of those?
And if you buy a side-by-side with heat and air conditioning enclosure. And cab and enclosure.
Oh, you're $30,000.
Oh, man.
No problem.
I mean, they went from 10 to everybody had a 10,000 to like 15 and to 20 and 5, and now you might as well just buy a vehicle.
I compared them to boats. I mean, they're fun, but the minute you drive off the lot, they're worth considerably less than you paid for them.
And I can tell you from experience, they are meant for off-road, but yeah, they roll over real quick. Real quick. Like, in not even bad conditions. And then when they roll over, all the plastic breaks, and it's like $5,000 worth of damage. It's like ridiculous.
I forgot about that story.
Yeah.
I suppose you could insure your vehicle probably easier than you can insure your side-by-side, too.
Yeah. And like going down the roads, it seemed like them side-by-sides were squirrely. I mean, you're just kind of all, they don't fit the wheel track. And, you know, I don't know. I just, the Jeep's been a really good fit for me. And as I get old and lazy, it's just a real easy way to go scout.
So, like, when I'm going down the road, say we're going 55, 60 mile an hour. On the gravel, on the Ranger, I'm comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there's enough give. But if you're on pavement, it is. It's like.
It's like you're sticky.
Yeah, right. It's like, I don't know. Seems dangerous. So, if you're listening, Polaris or Can-Am or Honda, want to sponsor the podcast.
Does anybody make.
We could change our mind.
What about Jeep?
Jeep.
Does anybody make
trackers
a side-by-side that the wheelbase is meant for? Like, did they plan it to be meant for cornrows or for...
I don't think anyone planned it for agriculture. I know our Polaris has wheel spacers to go down.
Oh, they do? Okay. Yeah.
Well, that's handy. I'm going to completely jump off topic. But you guys have any excitement level at all for the Olympics?
No.
None? That was one of the fastest no's. And you're typically a...
I do like sports. I'm more of a winter Olympic guy myself, you know, curling,
yeah,
the skiing, that kind of stuff. But like all the political shit behind
that's
this
true.
One, it's just like I don't have any.
I've been watching those videos nonstop because those people are incredibly strong. And so when you get to the gymnastics people, like I don't think they give them enough credit. But those people do the rings and the uneven bars. And if you ever try that yourself, you'll have a whole new appreciation for it.
The individuals, yes. They're amazing.
Yeah. I've got a sister that, well, we got... Most of my family is into CrossFit.
And yeah.
Like the muscle up where you got to do
yeah.
and to pull on those rings. They are fit and they struggle to do it. So you to watch these Olympic athletes make it look easy?
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
So I've been watching that. As soon as you get anywhere to watch one video, the next 15,000 videos you watch are exactly the same. They just, yeah.
I used to watch Olympics a lot, and the last couple I've just, I kind of quit watching TV a lot too.
Yeah,
I
mean,
I
just yeah, that's where I'm at.
Yep.
And I gave up on the news. It just seemed like it enraged me every morning, and then I'm upset yeah. all day. So,
how many people watch the news, you think, anymore, or just even watch TV versus streaming?
I feel like I think news clips through Twitter and TikTok. Like if there was something newsworthy that someone saw, they're now sharing it on their social media platform.
Yeah. If you watch the actual news, like not your local news, well, the local news is pretty bad too, but if you act like whatever CBS's or NBC's yeah. in the morning, it's all COVID. They start out with COVID, like this new Delta variant.
Still?
It's like, yes, it is still COVID shit, and it's like just fear, constant fear. I don't care if it is coming. I don't want to hear about it all the dang time.
Well, that's what I think is frustrating, and kind of where I was going with this Olympic topic was there's athletes, and I'm only hearing about the American ones, that are not being allowed to compete because they didn't pass their COVID test.
Well, I'm going to go to an auction contest in Canada. I just got invited, but we had to quarantine for 3 days prior to going to the contest. So the contest actually had to go you had to be there 5 days early.
Really?
Just quarantine. That's their rule.
What the hell's 3 days going to do?
I don't know.
So, well, we
and all at the least, cardboard
at least
beds.
I got a laugh in studio.
Got a quarantine.
Nobody else might be laughing at yeah. that. But at Alberta. Least
and you got to sleep on a cardboard bed.
Yeah, a cardboard bed that's supposedly supposed to deter sex.
It's because they're trying to be more environmentally friendly.
Well, I don't know who told you that.
Did you see the guy jump on the bed? That's the athlete yeah. that was on Jimmy Kimmel. Was it Jimmy yeah. Kimmel?
Jimmy yeah. Fallon.
Jimmy Fallon.
He made a good point, though, except for. Yeah, it probably works when you're like 4 foot two and you're 70 pounds and has sex like a...
And yeah. who has sex standing up. Yeah.
Well, and then probably the first news I started hearing about the Olympics was our basketball team losing an expedition game or exhibition games.
Was it basketball or women's soccer also
Our
lost?
Basketball team, because none of our good players, which no one watches the NBA anymore, so...
Yeah, I saw our women's team lost today, 4-0. So kind of a poor beginning showing for what we've got going on. But I remember, especially when the Olympics were in Atlanta, and I remember the stories of, I can't remember the last one where it was, but they talk about how the sexual tension is so high. I mean, the hormones in these athletes are, I don't want to call them high strung. I mean, everybody's at peak performance.
Yep.
So they always hand out a ton of condoms.
Yep.
But Tokyo's not distributing any.
Did you know that what's the...
Why can't you bring your own condoms?
What's the hookup app? That was more used by athletes than...
The hookup app?
Yeah. What's the hookup app?
Why are we looking at...
Tinder.
Why are we looking at the in-studio audience?
I was just looking at younger people. That's all I was looking at.
Was more used by athletes.
Yes. Was more used by athletes.
You got to put that in your bio that you're an athlete? Is that how they tell? So I don't know what it is. I have not poured this beer any differently than I did the others. And every one of these has an inch and a half of foam in a cup.
That's just so Boulevard wheat?
Boulevard unfiltered up. Wheat 100. So 100 calories. So just as an FYI, but as I get ready to pass these around for the last beer, don't pour it in a glass. Just drink it out
so
of the
So they
can.
Put more foam in there because there's more foam, less
wow.
beer.
Oh, my.
That's how it's 100 calories.
Well, that would be dumb. If that's true, that is dumb. Dole Distributing, thank you very
I
much.
I don't think that's possible.
You don't? That was just kind of my little rant for the Olympics. The bed's being made out of cardboard. The whole anti-sex movement.
Did you see that TikTok of the trans athlete?
The weightlifter?
They wanted to be on the podium so they could burn the American flag.
What? Yeah, I did. I saw that.
What? But then why are you even in the Olympics representing us?
Why are you representing America?
I don't give a shit that you're trans or...
I understand that there are some weird things to get someone motivated to do something.
Yeah.
But does that have to be your only motivation to compete?
I don't know. I'd be pissed if I was a girl athlete and a guy decided to become a girl and then just went and dominated, you know.
Well, the second thing is I'd be pissed about the second qualifier from the U.S. that didn't get to go, which probably missed it by a fraction of a maneuver or a weightlift. And someone's going to go and disrespect the country that you're from.
I've always struggled with that mentality that they hate our country so much, yet they're still
Why
here.
Why are you?
I mean, It's one of those, it's like at the universities, people will get up and talk about how they disparage minorities. And you know, it's a white person up there talking about how we need more diversity on our campus. And it's like, why don't you offer your seat up to someone then?
Right. Yeah.
Put your money where your mouth is. Like, everybody has a cause until it affects them.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. I think you're right. Let's do this last one here, and then we'll get ready to wrap up the show. So again,
this is the foam beer.
The foam beer from Doll Distributing. 100 calories, 5 grams.
So this would be like the Boulevard Wheat
light.
It's got some kind of aftertaste. I'm trying to think of what it is.
It is kind of airy.
Yeah, it's bubbly.
It's light.
I think I'd rather just have a Boulevard Wheat.
So for listeners, this is a white can. Everything else we drank was in a black one.
Unfiltered.
Unfiltered. This is white. Hazy American Saison.
58 carbs.
I just wonder what they cut out of there. Google machine, how many calories is in just a regular Boulevard Wheat?
Google machine.
Can we make alcohol? Like five, we can make alcohol with oats, can't we?
Yeah. Actually, we were contacted by a brewery that was interested in using
Because they do like oatmeal stouts and things like that. Yeah.
Yep.
I never liked the smell of oatmeal. Drove me nuts.
Really?
Yeah, but I am changing my palate the older I get.
I used to love oatmeal. I hardly ever eat it anymore, but... It sounds good.
Boulevard Unfiltered Wheat, 152 calories, 15 carbs. So they cut the carbs by a third and took a half of the calories out.
Mm-hmm.
Cut it to a third.
I think I'm just taking the Boulevard Wheat.
It's worth it.
Thank you, Doll. I mean, we're not going to not drink it.
it will disappear.
That is
exactly right. Well, to kind of prep you here before we close out, we ask every listener the same question. What do you think the most successful farmers all have in common? So think about that answer. Reminding you guys again, you're going to get sick and tired of hearing this because we're July 21st as we record this, and December 2nd and 3rd is a long time from now. So I promise I will try to help make this interesting throughout this process, but mark your calendars. This is going to be one of the events you don't want to miss. I don't care if you're not on TikTok. I don't care if you're not on Twitter. Instagram, don't even use social media. If you're listening to this podcast, there are going to be, hopefully, hundreds of others just like you.
What are we shooting for, 400?
In Ames, Iowa. We got capacity for 400.
We got capacity, better get in.
But I'm not going to limit ticket sales. If we have enough lead time, I will find a new venue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If this goes to 500, 600, 700 people, fine. I want you to get out of this event what you're coming to get. So... Put it on your calendar. We will have more details to come.
Yeah, because tickets aren't available.
Do you have to farm to come to this deal?
Absolutely not.
No.
Okay. You have to be willing to make yourself better.
So this is more about the connections than farming.
Absolutely.
All day long. So connections.
Yeah, a little bit of fun. That's why we do Farm for Fun shows.
I mean, generally in the ag industry would probably be good, but you don't have to be.
And we got some
special, just be an ag supporter.
Special stuff that we're not even... Yeah.
Yeah, we got a little bit of finalizing left to do as we get this planned out, but wanted to make sure everybody gets it on their calendar so there's absolutely no excuse.
Taylor Sumption is doing the flyover.
That's right. got it. He's going to drop off the ceremonial
right over, Jack Trice Stadium on Thursday.
Ceremonial game ball.
Someone's going to jump out of it and parachute in.
I'll do the jump out. We can do that. Yep.
I like this. All right, Taylor. What do you think the most successful farmers all have in common?
One that I think of right away is most of the successful farmers I know of are very innovative and driven. They find new ways to get things done. I originally went to college to be an engineer, and watching my parents struggle through the 80s, they always told me not to farm. Probably why I'm farming, because I didn't listen to them. But when I decided to come back and farm, one of my mentors, I told him about it, and he's like, that's good. He goes, you'll be good at it, because he goes, you're always looking for new ways to do things, and you don't care what your neighbors think of you. And what he meant by that is, I'll be the guy out, you know, wrecking 30 acres of corn, trying something kind of weird. And I think always trying to get better is a common thread in the farmers I know that have been successful.
Which I think shows why you're starting this Anthem oat deal. Like, you're not happy with the status quo, with the commodities. I was the same way with the Aronia berries. That's not going the same good direction.
It might now that you've got some oat to be able to put it in.
Maybe. I got 4 acres left that's starving for a place to go. But like, yeah, I think just having that, you're not satisfied. You want more.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I think most farmers, we're not that different, really. I've always believed everybody's a kind of a doing of their own environment. You know, they kind of evolve according to, you know, what comes up around them. And when I think of farming and where my path has led me is different events in my life have driven me. You know, value-added agriculture was the origin of agriculture. Mm-hmm. They used their product to trade for other. I mean, this isn't a new concept that we're doing at Anthem. It's almost reverting back to what agriculture used to be, mm-hmm. in a way.
Mm-hmm. Did you know who else is very innovative? Mm-hmm. Harry Stein.
Oh, jeez.
Did you see what he did this week?
There's so many directions you could have gone with that.
Did you see what he did this week? I mean, he put on the gloves.
Yeah. Did he take the gloves off?
Well, yeah. Well, got in the ring.
There you go.
Got in the ring with the dicamba whole deal. Do you guys plant dicamba beans up there?
We were all dicamba until this year. We went all Enlist. And
they're all kept, aren't they?
Not all of them. You know, there's ground that we farm about 30, 40 miles north of our main farm that is a big Liberties, conventionals, a lot of organic farms. None of them are cupped up there.
Okay.
So all summer I've been hearing about it's not the day, you know. Oh. And I want to believe them. I mean, and I was defending dicamba. I still kind of defend that chemistry because
it's a great chemical.
We live, the kochia is one where it just you kind of need it. Yep. But in the same fashion, it's been really hard to watch our soybeans this summer. Yep. And I mean, there's a lot of excuses and a lot of other things out there, but I've been around for a long time. One of my good friends is a great agronomist, one of the smartest guys I know. Mm-hmm. He says it's dicamba.
Yeah.
It's definitely some dicamba. I think we're dry. There's a lot of stress, a lot of different things going on. 3 years ago, we were dry like this, and all the non-dicamba beans cupped too. It's not just dicamba, but
things
it's
get
definitely
magnified.
Causing some of it.
Yeah. Right? We had that terrible last year. I mean, almost every field that wasn't dicamba was cupped. We had Iowa State out all the time. This year, not as much cupping down here, but I think because of that, so many people went away from it, you know, down here, so you're not seeing it. I did see my first cup beans, I think, about a week ago. So
there's an article on EggWeb, I think, today on dicamba as well.
Yeah, it's a tough spot because it's like we want to defend the chemistry, right? We need mm-hmm. chemistry, but you don't want to be...
I think the Extend Flex is a good approach. I mean, the full Extend, honestly, in hot Junes like we had this year, you shouldn't have been out there after about June 5th.
Yep.
You know, and one of the problems, and nobody wants to talk about it, I got a picture from a neighbor the other day, somebody out spraying last week with an Extend-Max tote on the trailer.
Yeah.
So you can say it's not happening go out and drive the countryside, and it is.
So the one of the fields that I know is a buddy that you and I know, won't mention him on here. We were up doing some custom fungicide spraying, and across the road was his beans. And I was like, those beans look a little cupped, buddy. And he said, yeah, they do. So we walked over there and looked right next to a large ag company that has test plots. And you know what I saw around their test plots? Curled over water hemp. Like they went around the edges and sprayed.
Just lately?
Yeah. They were still green, just curled over. And it's like, I mean, I'm not saying that's dicamba, but
sure,
that'd be the first place I start, you know?
Sure. I thought it was interesting. Jason Mock put a tweet out the other day that asked if our early beans is going to kind of be us riding an early death to being able to fight resistant weeds. Because if you're getting out there so early to put your beans in the ground, you're not hitting that first field cultivator pass after some of these have germinated to begin with. So I thought that was another unique perspective. We push planting dates on beans to get yield, but are we ultimately going to be riding into our future on resistance?
Well, not only, I mean, even if you put a pre on at that time, you only have, you know, 25 to 40 days of residual from that pre. And if you're doing that in March or April, I mean, you're running out. So it might be two passes of post spray again.
Right.
But that's where like the E3 is nice. You hit him once with some 2,4-D choline. And then you hit them once with Liberty
or the
Extend Flex or whatever, you know. Yeah. So you have options.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know where the ball will land on this year, but there's a lot of chatter about it, and I'm really on the fence. But up in our neck of the woods, it's the if we're warmer than normal, like we've been this year, 3 years ago, 2018, we were real hot and dry. It's a problem, you know, and it's a black eye to all of us.
Yeah.
When you have that negativity out there, you know, and it would be, I don't know what the answer is, but in my opinion, something should be done.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right.
That was almost an after show.
It was.
Yeah, just move that to the after show.
Normally, we don't throw a lot of conversation in after that that really tough question.
I just saw that on the sheet, and I'm like, oh, that was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
So
cool. Well, why don't we get ready to send this out, Corey?
Crack a Boulevard Wheat. Well, actually, Crack a Boulevard Brewing Company. Could be a wheat. Could be another doll distributing beer. Thank you very much. You deserve it. Thank you, Taylor.
Intro music recorded by Tyler Richton and the High Bank Boys. Commentary added by Elena Montemagni. And credit to bensound.com for music.